Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Teresa. And we're talking with the people who are growing, raising, harvesting, and producing food here in our bountiful coastal region.
And also to those who are selling, cooking, serving, and eating the freshest food available in our communities.
Join us today in a conversation about what's in season right now here on the North Coast.
Today, we are talking with Jonathan Hoffman of Cannon Beach, a chef, artist, and entrepreneur, as well as Mike Selberg of Cannon Beach Distillery. And it's really great to have you both here, young people actually in business in Cannon Beach and making your lives work there. So welcome to both of you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And I just want to say for our listeners that we're going to do something a little bit unusual this time. We were going to do two separate shows with Jonathan and Mike, but we're kind of combining them. So we're doing a two-part show because they have such a wonderful rapport talking with one another, and they're both part of the food scene in Cannon Beach. So this will be a two-parter, so you're going to have to tune in again in
2 weeks.
2 weeks to catch part two, or go to the website and listen to the podcasts of it. But we're super excited to have you both here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
It's really great to have some representation from south of Astoria and actually Cannon Beach, which is such a small community. So how did you guys get here in Cannon or come to Cannon Beach? How'd you get on the North Coast? Jonathan, I'm going to take you first.
I started out my journey to Cannon Beach from culinary school, and I went to culinary school in Scottsdale, Arizona. I was looking for internships, and a friend of mine knew somebody at the conference center, and it was my last choice, but it ended up being the only choice, and so I decided to go, and it was a great place where I learned my basics. I got all the knowledge I needed, and I thought I'd spend a year and then head off somewhere else. And here I am 10 years later.
So great.
And I haven't been able to leave yet.
Such a Cannon Beach story.
No big deal. I'm happy. I love my home.
What do you think has held you here?
It's hard to say. Once I got out of the bubble of that is the conference center, you kind of are in that community. Mm-hmm. And I got to a point where I wanted to experience the rest of the community around me. And I got out of there and just really discovered a lot of people that were caring and excited about just being, you know, loving each other. And so I decided to experience that more. And as time went on, I started to get to know people, make connections. And now anytime I think about taking off and leaving town, I think about having to establish connections again. And you know, what if I go to this other place and I need this and I don't know where to go? And and maybe that's kind of boring, but you know, I love the fact that if I need something, I know who to go to, and my local web is working. Yeah, it's just nice to have that resource. So I think that's what keeps me here.
Yeah. And so for our listeners, can you explain what the conference center is? If they're not from Cannon Beach, they might not know what the conference center is.
The conference center is a Christian organization. Most people think it's a church or a Bible school, but they just house a Bible school and feed them. They have retreats that other organizations, not even always churches, will come and rent spots and support their food service there. But they also organize their own conferences.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, for a lot of people in the Northwest, it's a family tradition to come to Cannon Beach and mm-hmm. go there. And so they're one of the top, actually, food service operations, money-wise, on the West Coast.
So how many?
For Sysco, when they were with Sysco, they were top 10.
What's their capacity?
We could usually serve at our max. We did about 500 people.
Wow.
And that was when we had we had a Northwest camps, Christian camp and thing, like a gathering. And I think we did about close to 500 people.
Wow.
We usually don't try to go over 4, but it was just a big showing of people. So,
and you've gone to other extremes from that too, of cooking for very small groups of people.
Definitely,
as well. So it's amazing that flexibility in your skill set.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was quite a good
Well, yeah, I've recently been doing some private chef work in rental homes and stuff, and working through some of the rental companies in town, and cooking for a small family or a small wedding is definitely different than cooking for 400 people. I think, you know, the thing that always pops into my mind about that is, if you imagine seasoning food for your family, imagine making enough rice for 400 people and making sure you get the salt right. I mean, that's the basic thing, right. And it's so,
that's really,
it's a big deal, yeah. You know, so you got to get that down. And that place gave me the ability to kind of
do that.
And
that's so
I've
great.
Been able to go other places and do big food things and make it look like I know what I'm doing.
Well, we're going to turn the focus on Mike now. So, Mike, are you originally from the North Coast? How did you end up here?
Well, I was born in Portland, and I started, you know, as long as I can remember, I've spent every summer in Cannon Beach. And we got a house down here when I was about 6 years old, and spent every summer down here. I started working in Cannon Beach when I was about 15 at
So where did you work?
Pizza Feta was my first job. Yeah, you know, I was throwing pizzas, that surfer kid back there, just having a blast. And, you know, I bounced around a lot, you know, moving different places. I went to high school in Colorado. But you know, every break, even, you know, spring break, I've had a three-day weekend. Any time I could, I'd try and make it back down here because it, you know, it felt like home. It was definitely where I identified myself with. And then 2 days after I graduated from high school, I jumped in my car and drove back down and met up with some guys that I was working with at Feta and got a house and took a year off before I went to college up in Washington. And even when I was up there, you know, on the weekends, I would be working at a surf school down in Cannon Beach. So, you know, you just couldn't keep me away. And
that's quite a powerful pull.
Yeah. You know, it was good. It's interesting because even, you know, it always, with the economy bouncing around and all that stuff, it's just nice to have those connections, be able to, you know, I always could find a job in Cannon Beach, no matter what time of year it was. Just because you knew somebody and the town takes care of itself. And there's just honestly some great, great people down there that, you know, once you make that connection with them, they're going to look out for you. So not a hard decision to try and move back here and, you know, make a living here. And I've worked service industry for so long, you know, everything that I've done has been service oriented, mostly in the food industry. And it was, you know, at some point I finally hit that point where I was said to myself, I just got to start working for myself and, you know, run things the way I want to run them. And I'm incredibly fortunate to be able to open up a distillery in Cannon Beach and make that a reality.
That's so great.
It's kind of amazing. And just to pick a distillery as your business, I mean, that does seem a little bit out of the blue. I mean, I would think in this area, microbrew seems to be the trend, but distilling as a whole, I mean, I know it's becoming very popular and there's a lot of micro distilleries all over the country now, but
yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people are like, oh, how did you choose that? And I'm like, well, I could, you know, why wouldn't I if I had that capability? It's amazing. But it really just landed in my lap. I mean, that being said, I've worked extremely hard on it, but it just fit everything that I was looking for in a business that I wanted to start. It's incredibly scientific. I have a background in biology and chemistry and, you know, just all that hard science, and then balanced with a truly, I mean, it's an art form in a lot of ways. And I know a lot of people might snicker at that a little bit, but there's a lot that goes into it. If you really are trying to produce a really high quality, intricate spirit, it's, you can't just rely on the science. You have to really be into it and all, you know, very, very right and left brain at the same time. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard.
How long have you been in business as a distiller?
I opened up July 1st of last year, so just a little over 6 months.
And so how long did it take you to get your license to do that?
Remarkably, it might sound like a long time for a lot of people, but it took me from the onset of my business plan, it took me 8 months to open my doors, which is very fast in that industry. And to be completely honest, I'm still waiting on my last permits to come through for the city. So it's still in process, even though I've been up in it and running and doing a lot of fun stuff. So
Mike, you actually are distilling in your place of business as well as selling?
Yeah, I do everything under one roof. So it comes in as a raw ingredient. If it's a grain, I mill my own grains. I do all my own mashing, the fermentation, the distillation, all the maturation. You know, I have all the barrels in the back. So it literally comes in as a, you know, a raw ingredient and leaves as a finished product, all under one roof, which, you know, I sort of thought that's how all distilleries ran when I first got into this, but I've since learned that that's not entirely true. It's fascinating. The whole process just fascinates me. I can't think of letting go of one aspect of it. So
you know, when we arranged this show, we actually had one arranged with Jonathan and then one arranged with Mike, and then we discovered that you guys know each other.
Yeah.
So tell us how you got to know each other. Sounds like a food service, surfing.
Or do we want to know this story?
Well, Jonathan throws these fantastic mustache parties.
Mustache party.
Well, I mean, could have been something, yeah.
Yeah, I think I might have, I don't know. I've not really seen his face around.
Well, I think we've had a lot of run-ins where we maybe didn't talk or whatever, uh-huh. You know, just being a part of the community. And, you know, I remember running into him at the Warren House, and then he worked at the Warren House, and so we'd chat. And I know there's one moment when we probably hung out, and it was, and I can't remember what it is right now, but I think it might have been a bonfire this summer.
Yeah.
And I remember coming away from the bonfire thinking, gosh, Mike's pretty cool. Hang out some more, you know. I've came in and I've helped him with his labeling every once in a while, and I haven't roped him into helping me with any of my food stuff yet, but maybe someday.
Happen, right?
So you guys are both part of kind of an emerging food scene in Cannon Beach, or a developing food scene. It's kind of fascinating for such a small community. It's a fair amount of innovation that's going on down there. I mean, what kind of stuff do you see happening that you're excited about?
I don't know, just...
Aside from distilling, which
is
pretty awesome.
Well, no. I mean, there's a ton of stuff going on, especially, I mean, for your show, definitely towards the food. There's just a lot. I mean, there's just tends to be more young people that I think are kind of into that phase where it's... I've been working for other people for so long. I really want to start, you know... I'm seeing people starting to do their own thing, and it's starting maybe inspiring people to do some more stuff, mm-hmm. or just the fact that they can do it. There's so many great ideas out there that nobody's really, I don't want to say capitalizing on, but just mm-hmm. doing it. You know, the town can be so much more than it is, and it's already a pretty cool place, and it's just bound to get better the more, you know, more young people actually start doing stuff.
Well, and there is a kind of rhythm to living in a small, especially tourist town, and it is, although there's always had the artisan component, but winter is really when all the locals
go to Mexico.
Well, if you can.
What's in there right now?
And those that don't are kind of hanging out, and really it's a slower kind of nice time. I always get to see everybody I know in the winter.
Yeah,
you can go to the post office and you can
stay
actually
there
find
for an hour.
Yeah,
talking.
You can. Hey, we're going to take a quick little break. We're halfway through the show. You're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, and streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you are just joining us, we're talking with Jonathan Hoffman and Mike Selberg of Cannon Beach. Jonathan is a chef, an artist, and an entrepreneur, and Mike is a distiller entrepreneur. And we're just thrilled to have you both.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Jonathan. I mean, you say you've been here for about a decade now, 10 years, and this is about as long as I've been here.
Makes it sound really long.
It does. I was just realizing this yesterday was the anniversary of Packy and I pretty much moving to the North Coast, which uh-huh. was kind of shocking to think, oh, God, it's been 10 years. But a lot has changed in those 10 years. I mean, I think about us, we were just starting our farm then, and the local food scene was still kind of developing and emerging.
Yeah.
And I think about how you watching that grow and change over time. I mean, are there things that you can access now that, you know, weren't there for you in the beginning? I mean, how do you see that local food scene changing? Hopefully for the better.
I definitely see it changing for the better. I mean, some of the meetings I've had with you guys about food and stuff with the North Coast Food Web, talking about getting mobile meat packing, something like that to make. In the long run, I just see local food becoming cheaper for people that live here.
Right.
And even if I'm breaking even, I kind of want to do that. You know,
yeah.
I want to see people eating good things. And I think a lot of people in this area are seeing the same thing they're excited about. Whether it's a trendy thing and people want to be part of a trend, I don't know if that's a big deal around here. I think people just want to have a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
So Jonathan, one of the cool things that you've done is you had Seeing Green at the Cannon Beach Farmers Market, institution near and dear to my heart, and Teresa's, and Mark's, our engineers. And so tell us about that. I mean, because that really is what you're talking about, what you were doing with that.
Yeah, I would drive around a lot and gather ingredients and try and support my local farmers that showed up to the farmers market and get my salad from them. The first year it was buying salad and vegetables, and then this last year it was me growing my own salad and some of my own vegetables and sourcing fish from local people and just trying to create a delicious thing and make some money, you know. But more of it was just about just being someone at the market that was really believing in what the market was there for. Our Cannon Beach market is small. We don't get as many people as maybe the Astoria market, but we're so diverse. We've got, in my opinion, we've got a better selection of things than some of the other markets in the area. We've got cheese, we've got meat, we've got a bakery, and next year hopefully another bakery.
Good produce and a lot of things. It's a wonderful market. I've always really loved the Cannon Beach Farmers Market, and I know Packy and I both really miss it, and hope we'll be back there maybe this year. I know it's our goal to be back there this year. It is a wonderful diverse market for such a small community.
Yeah.
And it seems like the response from the community has been really good.
Definitely.
For it as well, and people really love food.
Yeah, and
it
could
too.
Be a better. There could be definitely a better response for it. It's just a matter of people figuring out that they can go have lunch there. And you know, I have a lot of people come to my booth, and they're like, "Oh, I didn't know I could eat here, and I wouldn't have eaten today. You know, I would have saved it up." But you know,
yeah, it takes a while, I think, for markets to kind of come into their own. And I think Cannon Beach is starting its fifth market this year, which seems hard to believe.
Yeah,
you see, pretty much everybody local there.
It's
like a really good place to catch up with people you haven't seen, especially in the
summer. It's on a Tuesday, which is in Cannon Beach the local weekend.
Kind of the day off for restaurant people.
So Mike, are you going to be able to sell spirits at the market? I know that's a whole different licensing thing, right?
Yeah, I can't even imagine the licensing issues with the OLCC.
I'm stuck to my cave most of the time. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, the permitting, the red tape, the licensing and all that for getting down. I mean, it would be absolutely wonderful, but you know, the way that things sit right now, it's pretty well, you know, it's pretty much stuck to my distillery. And that's all I can do. The cool thing with Cannon Beach though is that you know, we do a lot of art walks and wine tastings and that kind of thing, and so people are sort of accustomed to walking around and sampling stuff, and I can go to different art galleries and serve samples and do that kind of stuff, where you know there's a little bit more that I can do in Cannon Beach than you know a distillery could do in Portland or anywhere else in the state. So
do you serve from your distillery? I mean, do you have sort of like a tasting?
I have a tasting room. I have a little bar you can sit at. I can't serve cocktails, so the legal limit is I can serve a half-ounce sample, up to 5 of those per person per day, so 2.5 ounces, a little more than the shot. And it's, you know, it works out well, you know, especially for my liability and that kind of stuff. I've worked as a bartender long enough to not want to have that
hanging over your head.
For sure. But, you know, just get people a sense of what the spirit is and,
So let's talk a little about that. So, yeah. And what
kind
of, what kind of, and what kind of a still do you have?
Okay. So right now I have two very different styles of rum, and then two very unique, very different kind of takes on different gins. I run off of a 100-gallon. It's a column still. It's got six plates in it. So that basically means that there's six different degrees of distillation in the same still. So, and I can engage and disengage those. So it's a lot of mumbo, you know, technical talk. But I can basically distill pretty much everything off of one system.
And is that using steam?
So it's a steam jacketed still. So everything is that even heat is really what drives it. I mean, basically what the still does is I brew something that's a really rudimentary, I mean, think of it as a beer, just a, you know, a 5 to 10% by alcohol by volume beer. It goes into the still and it steam jacket, it heats it up. And all the different compounds that are produced during fermentation have different boiling points. So what we drink as drinking alcohol is ethanol, and that boils 172, 173 compared to water, which is up about 212. So as you're heating something up, that alcohol comes out of solution first. And what the column does is separate it out slowly, more pure and more pure, the more of those plates you have engaged. And then at the top, you have a condenser, which circulates cold water, and then a second condenser, also circulating cold water, that takes that steam and recondenses it into a liquid. So you're just purifying it out.
So like with a traditional pot still, you would have to distill things more than once, but with the column still, it all happens in one process?
Exactly. Well, I can do it a couple different ways. But yeah, the pot still generally is those triple distilled things. You get a lower proof and then slightly higher proof and then finally, you know, a really high proof, depending on what you want to get. Versus what I do is I can pump it out like a pot still and go low proof, or go engage everything and go really, really high proof. So if I'm doing a gin or a light rum, I can do something that's a very high proof, very, very pure distillation, distilling out all of those byproducts. So something that doesn't have to age, doesn't have to be charcoal treated, anything like that. Or I can open it up for, say, a whiskey or an amber rum or something. I want a lot more flavor of the base to come through, and that gets pumped out really fast, and generally some more off flavors come off in that, but that can be remedied with some barrel aging or charcoal treating or all sorts of different ways.
So you're making gin and you're making rum?
Gin and rum. I do a different whiskey every month right now. My first whiskey is a bourbon that'll be coming out in October of 2014. It's everything that's whiskey is a minimum of 2 years aged.
Okay.
Whiskey really needs an oxidation. You can use small barrels to try and get a lot of oak on the spirit, but whiskey has to oxidize to get that really mature flavor. So, and that doesn't really even start happening until 16 to 18 months. So at least minimum 2 years on whiskey, they'll be ready when they're ready.
But, and then rum is aged as well?
Well, it all depends on how much you're taking out of the still. So my rum, I have an amber rum that's a blackstrap molasses-based rum that it matures for about 3 to 3.5 months. And that's just based on, I'm not trying to oxidize it. I'm just trying to get the color out of the barrel and the flavor out of the barrel. So give it a really nice oaky, smoky tone. And that I can get very quickly, especially with a small barrel with a lot of surface area. So it really depends on how technical you want to be in your distillation process, what flavor you're going for, oxidation, what kind of spirit it is. I mean, I could talk about it for
nuanced.
And then gin has an herbal base, right? Yeah, I mean, all the flavors come from the fresh herbs or berries or juniper, right?
And again, more than one way to skin a cat here. So gin legally has to be a grain-based spirit predominantly flavored with juniper. So a lot of ways to go on that, whether it's a, you know, just a neutral grain spirit that you flavor with essential oils or infuse botanicals in. You don't even technically have to distill it if it's already, you know, already up at, you know, 190 proof. When you get it, you proof it down. What I do is I start with organic two-row malted barley. I do all the mashing, ferment it to about 8 to 10% alcohol, put that in the still, and then I infuse all whole dried botanicals into that.
So botanicals, tell us what you're
using. So obviously a lot of juniper.
Okay.
I'm really trying to get away from the London Dry style, which is New Plymouth, all those different very, very juniper forward styles of gin. So mine are a bit more botanical. One of my gins is very earthy. I use a little bit more anise, a little bit more coriander. It still has a little citrus peel in there, but all in all, about 6 to 8 herbs in that one. Very still juniper forward, but not going to be, you know, that really piney flavor that you really associate with gin.
Right.
And then the other one is all Asian inspired, so a little bit more juniper in it to give it something familiar. But then I use a whole lot of lemongrass, very citrusy, very bright.
Wow.
I want to give it some bite that you usually get with gin, so I use a cardamom in mm-hmm. there, some hibiscus, some chamomile, some orange peel. That one's a really complex, about 10 herbs and spices infused in that.
Now, gin doesn't need to be aged, though, right?
No.
It pretty much just comes out and does it get watered to get the proof down?
Is yeah, that so everything that comes off the still, generally, my gins come off between 170 and 180 proof. And obviously, you don't want to drink that unless you really have something else in mind. I do every day, which is sad. you proof that down. You basically just water it down. But as anybody around here knows, not all water is created equal.
No.
We have very soft water in Cannon Beach, so I really like to keep it crisp. It's all filtered. I actually add a little bit of a gypsum calcium to it and to give it just a little bit more of a crispness, keeps it really clear.
That's so cool. Well, one thing that we always do on this show is we ask you about some recipes, and Jonathan's a chef and you're a drink master. And this time of year, it's really cold, and especially today is really cold. Give us, what are you guys thinking about for food?
Can match these
yeah,
up.
Yeah, let's see.
Show one, Jonathan, you go first.
Lately, I've been doing a lot. I've been doing polenta.
Oh, I love
lots
polenta.
Of cream and fattening things to get your dopamine levels up.
Yeah. So kind of like not the hard kind, the nice soft kind.
Yeah, I like to do it. My ratio for polenta is a lot different than a lot of the bags would say. I think that's usually 2-1, and I usually go 4 or 8-1.
Wow.
And just let that kind of simmer for a long time and let it get creamy and soak in. Usually I like to use a flavored thing, you know, like chicken stock or veggie stock or something like that. I just like a really simple rosemary, salt and pepper, some garlic. And in the restaurant industry, you'd make that without the milk and cream. And then when someone orders it, you add that at the end and then finish it with butter.
This is sounding really good to me right now.
My favorite pairing for that kind of polenta would just be a really simple pork tenderloin. Just sear it off, salt and pepper, nice little bit of pink left in the middle. And those two things together are just
sounds
awesome.
Fabulous. All right, let's think of a drink then.
Oh, man, that's a high bar to set. I don't know. The holidays and all that kind of stuff. I made a lot of hot buttered rums this year.
Little more butter, can't go wrong, right?
A little bit more.
That's how we're going to match them up, butter on butter.
Well, I use brown sugar in mine, so, you got me a pork chop. But it's so easy to make. You just melt a little butter down, as much cinnamon, nutmeg, vanilla you want to add in there. And then, depending on the type of rum you want to use, you can either go really light and refreshing. My light rum is really delicate flavor, so it just really blends in there. If you want to be dangerous about it and not really taste your alcohol in a drink, then that's a good way to go. But an amber rum really kind of adds that earthiness to really balance it out.
So we are at the end of the show, and we're also ready for a drink. Thank you so much for joining us on today's Food Talk, fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast.
And this conversation is going to continue next time, because we've still got a lot more to talk about with Jonathan and Mike. So please stay tuned for that. Thanks in the meantime to our wonderful patient engineer, Mark Albrecht.
And this show will be available as a podcast at coastradio.org.